Hello, welcome to the SMU Perspectives Podcast. My name is Robert Ehlert, and I am the SMU Commentary Editor. Today, we're going to talk about the important work our students are doing in SMU's Dedman School of Law to help seek justice for women who are described as criminalized survivors. These are women who too often are arrested and then prosecuted by our legal system after they have been victimized by crimes. This work is being done in SMU's Elmo B. Hunter Legal Center for Victims of Crimes Against Women. It's one of 10 law clinics designed to do two things: to provide real-world experience for our law students under the supervision of faculty, and to provide free legal services to people who might not otherwise be able to afford it. They are licensed to practice law under the supervision of faculty. My guests today are two SMU Dedman Law professors, Natalie Nanasi and Demetris Lopez, and their student, Erica Mellon, who has been working in the trenches to help these criminalized survivors.
Yeah, so our clinic is called the Judge Elmo B. Hunter Legal Center for Victims of Crimes Against Women. I know it is a mouthful, but basically what we do is we provide legal representation to survivors of gender-based violence. And by that, I mean we're working with women who have experienced intimate partner violence, sometimes also called domestic violence, sexual abuse, or human trafficking. And for those survivors, we help them with a range of different legal issues that they're experiencing as a result of their victimization. So we provide family law services, we provide immigration law services, and then, as we will talk about later today, we provide legal services in the area of criminal justice.
So tell me about your colleague, Professor Lopez, and how her arrival to the school allowed you to create a pathway so the two of you could identify and assist these criminalized survivors.
Yeah, so we have been so blessed by the arrival of Professor Lopez to the clinic. The Hunter Clinic has been in operation since 2015, and it's been a very popular clinic. We have students who are interested in enrolling every semester. And in fact, we often have more students who are interested than we had capacity to take. And certainly there's never a dearth of people who need legal assistance. And so because of that need that we were seeing both from the students and from our potential clients, we were able to get additional financial support from the Hunt family who supported the clinic.
Thanks, Professor Nanasi. So I understand that new funding from the Hunt family allowed you to bring on Professor Lopez, who had years of experience as a prosecutor, and with that incredible insight about the criminal justice system and how to navigate it. Share with us how the addition of Professor Lopez allowed you to expand your work in key areas.
Prior to her arrival, we were working with survivors on what we call post-conviction relief. So we were filing petitions to seal or expunge criminal records. We had filed a pardon for a survivor of human trafficking. But what we started to see was that, of course, it was a benefit to our clients to have those records sealed and not be able to impact their lives after they had escaped from their trafficking or domestic violence situations. But once Professor Lopez joined the clinic, we thought, wouldn't it be better if we can prevent these survivors from having to go through the entire criminal process in the first place, if we can provide them with representation when they're initially charged with an offense, they don't have to go through the entire re-traumatizing process of being charged, going through a trial, dealing with a prosecutor, and then ultimately have this unjust conviction on their record that we can come back a few years later and seal what we thought would be so much better. And what we found has been better is that we're able to get to these survivors earlier on in their interactions with the criminal justice system.
Excellent. So, Professor Lopez, you were quite familiar with this type of client. You saw them from the perspective of a prosecutor, but knowing now that you're going to be working in this clinic, how did you put your experience into action?
Absolutely. So first, I would just like to say that working as a prosecutor, one of the things that I started to notice was that we were able to provide justice and assistance to survivors of gender violence, but in a very kind of small way. Big for them, big in the grand scheme of things, but survivors need a lot more than just help with the criminal justice piece. A lot of survivors are dealing with divorce or immigration issues, as Professor Nanasi mentioned. And when I saw the opening to join the Hunter Legal Center, that was the thing that first drew my attention, that it was a way to kind of have wraparound services and provide legal help to people that are at the intersection of poverty and gender violence, meaning our services are free, and so we're helping survivors who don't have financial resources, and we're able to provide more than just one piece of assistance for them. So, for example, if a survivor has a family law case and a criminal case at the clinic, we can help with both of those. And so the groundwork that Professor Nanasi did in building the clinic is just an essential part of being able to come in and just add on another piece of legal help that we're able to offer for survivors.
Professor Lopez, what is the typical profile of the women you seek to help?
So our requirements are that they are survivors of gender violence, meaning either domestic violence, sexual assault, or sex trafficking. And specifically for the criminalized survivor aspect of it is that they're having an interaction or a case in the criminal justice system. And I see those as kind of two different parts. One being they're having, they're being criminalized in a direct way. For example, if a woman is in a relationship with a man, they get into an argument, a physical altercation ensues. She's actually the victim, but when law enforcement arrives, he has marks on him, she gets arrested. That is direct impact, right? There's an incident that happened and the victim was directly arrested. So that's kind of the profile of the first type of survivor that we're seeking to help. And then the other aspect of that are women who experienced gender violence, maybe experiencing interaction with the criminal justice system. As a result of that, maybe they're using drugs or alcohol to cope, and they get a criminal charge for being a drug user. Well, her background as a criminalized survivor is still there. And so we're able to say, because of the trauma that you experienced, you're a drug user. So your drug case isn't directly coming from an incident that happened, but it's all very much so related. And so we'd be able to assist them as well. And so, like I said, those two components are that you've experienced gender violence and that you are now having to interact with the criminal legal system as a result of that.
And Professor Lopez, how did you get matched up with clients as you got underway?
So our clients are all referrals from agency partners. We work very closely with the Dallas Area Rape Crisis Center, or DARCY, Genesis Women's Shelter, New Friends, New Life. And because my connections were in Tarrant County, where I was a prosecutor, we also work with agencies out there, primarily Safe Haven of Tarrant County. And all of our referrals so far have come directly from our agency partners. They're working with survivors on resources, counseling, things like that. They know about the legal case that the survivor is facing. And then because of those established relationships, they reach out to the clinic to let us know that they have someone who needs our services.
Professor Lopez, thinking back to your days as a prosecutor, I imagine over the years you came across many criminalized survivors in the system whom you wish you could have helped.
I certainly didn't expect it when I left, but it has been a wonderful opportunity to take the experience. I was a prosecutor for almost 10 years, and then to find a legal center like the Hunter Clinic to not only be able to represent survivors, but to be able to teach students in the process as well.
All right. How many students have helped how many women to date?
So last semester, the spring semester of 2023, was the first time that we opened the clinic up to this kind of work. And during that semester, we had 5 students that were assigned to 2 survivors, and then myself and what we call our clinic chief, who is a former student of the clinic who loves it so much that they come back to continue work with the clinic. I worked with the clinic chief to offer consultations, meaning there were survivors in the public who had a public defender, but wanted to speak to someone who had a unique understanding of gender violence, just about the legal system as a whole. And we were able to offer free consultations to those women. We didn't sign on directly to represent them, but certainly played an integral piece in them being able to understand where their cases were, what that meant, what questions they need to ask their own attorneys. And we were able to do 3 of those consultations.
Professor Nanasi, because of your experience at Dedman School of Law, you had confidence there would be plenty of law students who could be trained and deployed to help these clients.
The wonderful thing about teaching at SMU Law School is that you're almost guaranteed to have a student who is bright, who is hardworking, who is thoughtful, and students self-select into our clinic. And so they're typically people who have some kind of connection to the issues that we're working on. They care about them either because they have personal experiences with the issue or have a passion that stems from a professional experience that they have had. So they're very easy to teach, I should say, up front. And part of what the clinic curriculum involves is a seminar. So typically what you would think a law school classroom looks like. We meet as a class. We have a syllabus. We have issues that we cover week after week in the classroom that then the students can take out and use in the real world and use in their cases. So we have classes on cultural competency, on fact investigation, on case theory, on writing. And so we're able to have that classroom experience where we can teach all of the students. And then they meet after that in their case teams with either myself or Professor Lopez, where we really dive into the specifics of the particular case that they're working on.
Thank you, Professor Lopez. We're fortunate today to have one of the students who worked in the program, Erica Mellon. She's a third-year law student who graduates in December. So, Erica, please walk us through your experience with the program and your client.
So our client was charged with public intoxication on a night when she was drugged and date raped, and she has almost no memory of the entire night past a certain point. She fled the date in her car and pulled over into a driveway to try to calm down and get directions back to her house. And the owner of the driveway then called the police to report a suspicious car in front of her house, and 5 officers reported to the scene. Our client tried to explain to the officers what had just happened, but the drugs made it very difficult for her to communicate coherently. And then on top of that, the extreme stress that she was under following the trauma. So the officers decided to arrest her for public intoxication, and she spent the night in jail.
Even after explaining what you knew of these circumstances, Erica, I understand the judge was unwilling to drop the charges. What happened next?
So we took on her case, and we were able to gather evidence on her behalf, including medical records from her rape kit test, photographs of her injuries, body camera footage from the arresting officers, and the police report that our client filed. We presented all this evidence to the prosecutor, and fortunately, he was very receptive to the information, and he agreed that she was not at fault for the night in question, and he dismissed the case. After that, we filed a petition for expunction to have the arrest permanently removed from her record, and that should be set for hearing very soon.
Professor Lopez, how did Erica and the other law students fare for their clients?
And one, they did an amazing job. And just to give Erica her flowers and kudos, she said that they presented information to the prosecutor and he dismissed the case. But the thing that's kind of that I want to highlight is that was a process, and that took about 3 or 4 different court settings, meetings, a series of emails to the prosecutor. So it wasn't just a one time they went in, although they are amazing and could have done that. It wasn't just a one-time conversation. They really had to broaden the lens and paint the picture for the prosecutor to be able to see exactly the picture that they were able to show, which was that this client was a victim of gender violence. And the other thing that I wanted to add is that according to the ACLU, about 64% of women who are incarcerated are victims of gender violence. And in some places, it's as high as 94%. And so Erica's client does not exist in a vacuum. And as I mentioned, her team did great work. And the purpose of our program is to try to help more people who find themselves in this situation.
Professor Lopez, having that criminal record can be devastating for the women we're talking about here.
It is very devastating and impacts every aspect of their lives. And so having just the arrest itself, even before the conviction, can affect any licenses that you have. So, for example, one of the women that we did a consultation with was a teacher. And because she was arrested, even though she was the victim in a situation, her teacher's license was put on hold and she wasn't able to work until the case was resolved. It can affect receiving financial aid or grants if you're trying to go to school. It can affect housing. It can affect the ability to get a job, right? Which if you can't work, then affects every other aspect of your life from a financial standpoint. And then on top of that, just the shame that comes with, as Erica was saying, being a victim in a situation where the person who abused you is facing no consequence, but you are carrying the shame of having been told by law enforcement, by our criminal justice system, that you are a criminal. And some of the survivors internalizing that, right? Not fully understanding until they talk to a lawyer that they're not at fault and that there is justice for them. And so, yes, like I said, it really impacts every area of their life.
Professor Nanasi, is there anything you'd like to add or elaborate upon?
To me, there are three things that strike me as important about this conversation. The first is that through the clinic at SMU, we're able to provide holistic services. So if you imagine a survivor of domestic violence or a survivor of sexual assault, they have a lot of different legal needs. They might have a lot going on in their lives outside of the legal system. They're trying to maybe find a shelter where they can go to be safe. They're trying to maybe enroll their kids in a new school. Maybe there's some CPS allegations. They might have a family law case. They might have an immigration case, a criminal case. And so to the extent that we can limit the number of stops, so to speak, that a survivor has to make, limit the number of times that she has to share her story to yet another new person, I think that's a big benefit that we're able to provide. And so we do have a number of clients who we're able to help, not just in one area of the law, but in a couple of different legal claims that she has. And it's a relationship that she's able to build with us. And it's a way that we understand who she is, where she's coming from, what happened, and we can use that to help her in a lot of different legal spaces. The other thing I just wanted to highlight that I think is really important is what Erica mentioned earlier, which is the services, especially in this criminalized survivor space, can be really hard to find elsewhere. Private criminal attorneys charge a lot of money. They may charge hundreds, if not thousands of dollars just for a consultation to be able to tell you, yes, I think you have a case, or no, sorry, I don't think you do. And as Erica mentioned, not everybody is eligible for a public defender or for an attorney at government expense in a criminal case. And a lot of nonprofits, I should also add, don't operate in the criminal space. There's some funding restrictions. And so it can be really hard for somebody to find an attorney for a criminal case kind of at baseline. And then layered on top of that, as Professor Lopez was suggesting earlier, to find an attorney that is going to be trauma-informed, that is going to understand the dynamics of gender-based violence, can be near impossible. And so it really is a great fit for us to be able to bring our legal expertise and our expertise with respect to understanding the dynamics of what a survivor is going through. And I think that's a really important thing that we're doing at the clinic. The last thing that I will highlight that, again, might be obvious, but I think it's just worth saying out loud, and this is true for our clinic and all the clinics at SMU Law School, is that there is such a great win-win that happens through this process, right? We're able to serve clients who really need the help, who almost certainly wouldn't be able to get it elsewhere. And we're able to teach students along the way. And so we have a number of alums. The Hunter Clinic started in 2016. So we've been around for a couple of years now. And we have students that have left our clinic and are now working in the field, that are now lawyers at Genesis Women's Shelter, that are now Title IX offices at other schools, that are prosecutors, that are taking what they learned in the clinic and then bringing it out into the world when they are practicing lawyers, which is fantastic. That said, we also have alums that don't specialize in this field that are still out there as lawyers contributing in really important ways. They're doing pro bono work. They are advising people in their lives who are going through these issues. As we know, 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 or 7, Professor Lopez, help me with the statistics.
7.
7 men, thank you, are survivors of domestic violence. And so statistically, as a lawyer, you are likely to have somebody come into your office and say, I need help with this issue that is directly related to gender-based violence, or even if not, somebody that you're working with on something totally unrelated that may confide in you because you have that kind of trusting relationship. And so it feels great to be able to send lawyers out into the world who are, of course, through the clinic, becoming skilled lawyers and advocates, but who also understand the dynamics of gender-based violence and are able to use that out in the world.
Two more questions about connectivity. Professor Lopez, how would a woman find you if she found herself in this predicament? Is there a way to work through the prosecutors or if they happen to hear this podcast?
Of course.
Yeah.
Most of our cases are coming from referrals at our shelters. But outside of that, if they just want to contact us directly, my email address is lopezd as in Demetrius, M as in Michelle, at smu.edu. And they can send me an email with some details about the situation, and we'll certainly review it, see if they meet the criteria, and would love to help as many women as we can that are dealing with this issue. Oh,
that's so helpful. And Professor Nanasi, how can people learn more about the program?
If you just go to the SMU Law School's main website and search for Hunter Clinic, you should be able to find information there. And then if people want to reach us, they can contact us via email at legalclinics@smu.edu. And our phone number is 214-768-2562.
Thank you all so much for sharing this information with us today. It is so valuable and necessary in the world we live in. And I want to add some other kudos. I want to thank Adam Neal for the use of the podcast that is leased to SMU Engaged Learning. I want to thank my colleague, Stephen Fasaro, who's been working the control booth here today. And most of all, I want to thank everybody for joining us for this episode of SMU Perspectives Podcast. Thanks.